When you think about these songs we've sung, Amazing Grace, Revive Us Again, and the hallelujah that goes in the chorus, there was no doubt a great need of that, as you find in the book of Malachi. Tonight we'll look again at the book of Malachi chapter 2. We're only going to cover the first 9 verses. There are just 6 major paragraphs in the entire book of Malachi. The first paragraph is chapter 1, verses 1 to 5. And the second paragraph is chapter 1, verse 6 through chapter 2, verse 9. So last time on Sunday night, we looked at the rest of chapter 1. Tonight we look at the first part of chapter 2. You remember how that last time we talked about that there was a problem with the spirituality of the priest. Well, he's talking to the priesthood again here in this second chapter. Beginning in verse 1, it says, "And now, O ye priests, this commandment is for you." So here are the people who are supposed to represent the spiritual center of the nation. The civil side would be Zerubbabel, and the spiritual side would be the high priest and the priesthood. In this section, and if you've read ahead, you may have seen this already. If not, we'll touch on it tonight. In this section is a detail about the man, Levi, one of Jacob's 12 sons, and a covenant that God made with him. And then, in view of the covenant that God made with Levi, the outgrowth of that, where the priestly family would obviously come through Aaron, but particularly come through the tribe of Levi. So the background of the Old Testament system of the priesthood through Aaron's family is founded in Aaron's ancestor, in Levi himself. And the details in Malachi 2 about Levi are only found here. They're not found in Exodus or Leviticus, by the way, as someone would say Leviticus, referring to Levi, or even in Numbers, or even in Deuteronomy. The details are found here about this individual. And they are great. By the way, there is a detail about Levi and a brother he had, Simeon, in the book of Genesis, and it wasn't all that glowing, was it? Because they basically led to the death of an entire group of people, Shechem's family, because he had defiled their sister, Dinah. But here is a detail about Levi in particular that is of a glowing report, and how that evidently it shows that as difficult as his life is in the book of Genesis, he had a spirituality about him. Evidently it would say he had a repentant heart, and therefore this is the covenant that God makes with him. So as bad as life can be, if you're willing to change and make correction, God provides then the benefit. This is another one of those Bible examples that even in tough times, God can forgive, and this amazing grace we've sung about and has been prayed about with Pat leading that prayer. But what I want to do before we look at the sort of the nuts and the bolts of this last section of this paragraph, let's just read it in one block, and then we'll go back and hit the high points. "And now, O ye priests, this commandment is for you. If you will not hear, and if you will not lay it to heart to give glory unto my name, says the Lord of hosts, I will even send a curse upon you, and I will curse your blessings. Yea, I have cursed them already, because you do not lay it to heart. Behold, I will corrupt your seed and spread dung upon your faces, even the dung of your solemn feast, and one shall take you away with it. You shall know that I have sent this commandment unto you, that my covenant might be with Levi, says the Lord of hosts." Now here's the historical reference. "My covenant was with him of life and peace, and I gave them to him for the fear wherein he feared me and was afraid before my name. The law of truth was in his mouth. Iniquity was not found in his lips. He walked with me in peace and equity, did turn away many from iniquity. For the priest's lips should keep knowledge, and they should seek the law at his mouth. For he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts." Messenger there carries with the idea of the spokesperson of God, meaning he was an inspired man at this point. "But ye are departed out of the way. Ye have caused many to stumble at my law. Ye have corrupted the covenant of Levi, says the Lord of hosts. Therefore," here's the conclusion, Have I also made you contemptible and base before all the people, according as you've not kept my ways, but have been partial in the law? Then the paragraph changes. Remember, one of the details in going through Malachi that I've mentioned, this sort of is the seedbed 400 years in the future of the chief priests and the scribes and the Pharisees. When Jesus gives that scathing rebuke in Matthew 23 of all those woes, you know, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, whatsoever therefore they bid you observe, observe and do, but do you not after their works, for they say and do not. And with grievous burdens would they burden you, though they would not lift with one finger what they place upon you. Well, what's the idea? They're partial in the law. Partial in the law. In other words, what they bind on you, they wouldn't even bind on themselves. Well, what's the background to the priesthood to try to correct that? Let's go back in history. Let's go all the way back to the ancestor, the one whom God made this covenant by which the whole priesthood under the law of Moses came through. So what's happened in this priesthood? It's become perverted. By the way, was it perverted before the captivity? Oh, goodness, yes. Those priests served idolatry. Those are the priests that were leading the nation away from God altogether. What happened to those priests? Well, those priests died. You had 70 years now of captivity, and now this remnant has come back, rebuilt the temple, the sacrifices are being offered again, the city of Jerusalem is occupied again. What's the nation doing? What is the spiritual nuts and bolts of the workers in this nation doing? I have a commandment, and it's for you. You better lay it to heart, or I'll curse your blessings. As a matter of fact, I've cursed them already. Why? Because you haven't laid it to heart. Isn't that a sad commentary on a people? A spiritual people that should be the ones that are the teachers of the law? You know, if the teachers of the law have problems, what are you going to do with those listening to the teachers of the law? And by the way, that's pretty much what happened in Jesus' day, right? They listened to the teaching of the scribes and the Pharisees, and when they perverted the teaching of the Old Testament, when Jesus comes on the scene, he shows them what the law really meant. It was so foreign from what they were taught the law said to what the law actually said, they didn't understand a lot of times what Jesus was saying. You remember in John 12, how that Jesus said, when the Son of Man is lifted up, he'll draw all men unto them. They said, who is this Son of Man? Who are you talking about? For we have heard it said that when the Son of Man comes, he lives forever. Who is this Son of Man? Well, who is it? It's the very one talking to you. When Jesus comes on the scene, when he actually arrives and starts teaching, the common people are enamored with what he's saying. How about the scribes and the Pharisees and the chief priests? Are they enamored with what he's saying and doing? No, they're so caught up in what? The traditions of the elders, or the way they see things, the perverted side of the way they see things, their partiality in the law, their interpretation of the law, anywhere close to what the law actually said. So how do you correct that? Let's go back and learn from history. And that's what Malachi does here. So we're going to look at several things here. There's several spiritual problems, and I've listed them here. There's four major ones. They don't have a heart to obey. In other words, we're the teachers. You don't teach us. We are the ones that teach you. Oh, by the way, Malachi is not a priest. He's a prophet. He is the man trying to correct the spiritual teachers of the nation. And you don't have a heart to obey? Think about it. If a person who's teaching a class or preaching a sermon doesn't have the heart to obey, how in the world do you give an invitation? Think about that a minute. How do you extend the Lord's invitation if you don't want to obey it yourself? Isn't that perverted? Isn't that twisted? Another thing, they've departed from the law. Oh, does that mean they don't know how to read? They don't know how to read the law? Oh, they read the law. But they're going to pick and choose what they want here. And in some cases, it's like, oh, that's not what the law said. We're the teachers of the law. You just listen to what we're saying. What else do we find here? There are people that cause other people to stumble. It said, now Levi, he's the one that kept people from iniquity. And what do? You lead people to stumble. Have you ever known of any doctrine out here taught by religious people that actually is a doctrine that teaches people to stumble? To teach his people, go ahead and live in sin. It's not that bad. It's not going to hurt. Don't you know God will take care of that in the judgment? Yeah, he'll take care of that in the judgment. But that's not the judgment you want. And then last of all, what is it? They're partial in the law. We're going to pick and choose what part of the law we want to follow. By the way, you've heard the expression, you've quit preaching and gone to meddling. Sort of, maybe that's a southern expression, but it carries with the idea, I'll hear you up to this point, but now you started talking about things that I object to, you've quit preaching and gone to meddling. Well, what's Malachi doing? By the way, is he going to talk? He's ultimately going to talk to the people of the nation and not just the priest, but where does the book of Malachi start? It starts at the head. It starts at the spiritual head of this nation. If you don't start with the spiritual head of this nation, what do you expect the rest of the nation going to do? You got to deal with the teachers, and then you deal with the hearers. But if they won't hear, if the teachers won't pay attention, what in the world are you going to do in the class? What are you going to do in the pew? What are you going to do from the pulpit if the pulpit's rotten? So these are the spiritual problems. Let's go back and look at Levi just a second while we read the verses. Verse 5, what's the very first thing said about this man? Very first thing, he feared God. It's a man that feared me. When a person fears God, what do you think will follow from that? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of what? Proverbs 1:7. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of what? Knowledge, isn't it? Now, a person who's a teacher, the spiritual teacher, should he not have knowledge? But he don't have knowledge if he don't have first what? A respect, a reverence for the source of this knowledge. That's God. By the way, what about Enoch in the book of Genesis? What do you find in Hebrews 11 and verse 5 about Enoch? Among all the things could be said about Enoch, what does the Bible say about him? He feared God. What does Hebrews 11:7 say about Noah? By faith, Noah, being moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house. Did he fear God? What would you find true of Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Isaac? What would you find true of all these people? They all feared God. What's the whole duty of man? Ecclesiastes 12:13. Fear God, keep his commandments. By the way, if you fear God, do you keep his commandments? Does it not naturally follow? By the way, do you think there is a great fear of God in this country? Do you find it to be a great fear of God? In your home? What about on your job site? What about in our school systems? What about in our world? Is there a great fear? I'm not talking about scared of God. I'm talking about respect for God. You know what we have on our coinage, and in God we trust? Does that involve a fear of God? Respect for God? If you put your trust in him, obviously you've got to have some respect for the person you put the trust in. God commands through Malachi the prophet, lay it to heart. I'll curse your blessings. But I've cursed them already because you don't lay it to heart. In other words, you've got a problem here, and I'm trying to get you to understand. Here's your problem. Now here's how you correct that problem. You didn't lay it to heart. Now lay it to heart. We'll talk about that at the conclusion of this lesson, what that involves. Okay. Second thing we learn about him. He was a teller of truth. It says the law of truth was in his mouth. Go back and read Proverbs 31 about the virtuous woman. Look at all the qualities of the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31. Was there anything in there about her mouth, what she taught? It's almost parallel to what you find here. In other words, by the way, does the truth hurt? Can the truth hurt? Can it be painful? When the prophet spoke to the people the truth of God, was it always, you know, glowing, you know, comforting words? No, sometimes it was a burden, wasn't it? What's the very first verse of Malachi say? Chapter 1, verse 1. The burden of the Lord. What do you do? When I speak forth, it's going to be, what is the truth of God? Not my opinion. What's the truth of God? What else? No iniquity was found in his teaching. You know, it's important not just to teach what God says, but also to teach against what folks say is God's word. Have you ever thought about the passages in the Bible where Jesus said no or not? I know in John 14, when Jesus is talking about heaven, verse 2, in my Father's house are many mansions. What's the next line? If what? If it were not so, what? Well, we don't talk about if something's not so. We just let anybody believe whatever they want. Here's what I believe. We don't worry about what anybody. No, if it were not so, what would he do? Y'all been talking about what would Jesus do? No, what? Not what would he do, what did he do? I would have told you, right? If it's not so, I would have told you. How about, not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that does the will of my Father. Isn't that one of those, if it were not so, I would have told you passages? It's one of them, right? And that's just a sampling. So when Levi actually taught the law, this covenant of life and peace that God made with him, and through the family of Levi comes the priesthood, all the way down to Malachi's day, really all the way to the days of Jesus Christ, with the chief priests, the scribes, the Pharisees, and all of what goes with the perverted of the law, the seedbed was right here 400 years before it ever took its full fruit in that day of the Roman Empire. When he speaks the law, and if it's not true, he tells you it's not true so that you don't be confused. By the way, think about it. Sometimes silence is interpreted as permission, is it not? In other words, if someone keeps saying something is true over and over and over and over and over, and nobody speaks up and says that it isn't, silence is often interpreted as what? For example, evolution is true. You came from a monkey. The earth is millions and billions of years old. Don't say anything derogatory about that. As God's people, don't say anything against that. And what will people interpret your silence to be? Now, when you stand up and speak against it, oh, well, that's different. That's different. You see, it's not so much what you say, it's what you avoid saying. What is a true teacher going to do? He's not going to tell you just the truth. He's going to tell you, now this is what you're being told is the truth. That's not the truth. The law of truth was not just in his mouth. He also had no iniquity come forth from his mouth. The word iniquity means to twist, to pervert, to alter, to change, to redefine the terms. Baptism. Surely nobody in the religious world has altered the meaning of that word baptizo for baptism to mean more than one thing, more than what it means to dip, to plunge, to submerge. Nobody's ever twisted that and said, well, I was baptized. Well, and what means? Well, when I was a baby, when I was a child, I was told, I was brought to this particular person and they poured or sprinkled water on my, so I was baptized. And you scratch your head and say, do you not understand baptism is a burial? Well, nobody ever told me that. All my family's always believed this. And that's just one example, right? Oh, just stay to your doctrine. Don't tell anybody there's something they've got to change. What would Levi do? What would this man Levi, the son of Jacob now, the one God gave the covenant that the priesthood's going to come through, what did this man do? The law of truth was in his mouth. When he taught, he told you only what thus said the Lord said. And if it somebody said something opposite, then he said, that's not so. If it were not so, I would have told you. Folks, that's preaching. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine. That's preaching. That's teaching. When Pat was up here praying, he was talking about parents and young people and so forth. See, all of us as older people need to sit down, as it were, with our young people and say, now this is what the Bible actually says and means, and I know what you're hearing over here, but that's not the Bible. Now, I know your friends may believe that, your friends may. That's not the Bible. Someone says, well, that don't sound too positive preaching, folks. Truth's tough. By the way, it puts you in an unpopular light, too. It sets you in that, what we call, minority. By the way, truth has always been in a minority. You just get used to it. What else do we learn about Levi? He's a man that didn't just teach you the truth. What did he do? He practiced it, didn't he? Look down here at this passage. He says, for the priest should keep the knowledge, they should seek the law at his mouth, for he's the messenger of the Lord. He followed, it says, he walked with me in peace and equity. In other words, whatever provided peace through the teaching of the law, that's exactly what Levi followed. By the way, equity is the opposite of inequity or iniquity. In other words, as someone might say, he just told it like it was. And let the consequences fall where they fall. Okay? It's not easy to do, is it? By the way, can you appreciate someone, as we say, who shoots straight with you? You ever had a doctor that didn't have a real good bedside manner, but he was real good at saying, you don't have this, but you got this. Here's a prescription, go fill it. If you don't feel better, come back 2 weeks. You say, well, man, I paid you $75 for 5 seconds. Okay? But the fact of the matter is, here's the truth and here's not the truth. Abhor what's evil and cleave to that which is good. By the way, you got to abhor what's evil as well as cleave to what's good. Romans 12:9. Last of all, he was a faithful influence among others. Notice it says that he caused many to turn away from iniquity. By the way, was there anybody out there in the world in Levi's day that were following iniquity? By the way, sin reigned in the world in Levi's day, didn't it? Jacob's day, Joseph's day. By the way, Joseph and Levi, they'd be contemporaries. Though Levi would be a lot older than Joseph, probably not many, many years older, but you know, they are brothers, right? Flesh and blood brothers. You know, you got the influence of Egypt, right? Was Levi ever in Egypt? This man Levi we're studying here, did he ever live in Egypt? Absolutely. Jacob and all his sons lived in Egypt. As a matter of fact, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Naphtali, they all lived in Egypt. What do you think they saw around in Egypt? Idolatry everywhere, right? So what if people started drifting off into this Egyptian culture? You know, this lifestyle of the Egyptian land. Do you know Moses ultimately even got incorporated into an Egyptian family? You know what he did when he became of age, Moses, the deliverer, the lawgiver? He chose rather not to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the what? Enjoy the pleasure of sin for a season. You mean there was sin in Egypt? You mean there was iniquity in Egypt? That's right. And Levi lived in Egypt. So what is Levi going to teach his children, the next generation of the tribe of Levi? Out of the father, Levi. What's he going to teach them? This is the law of God. This is what you follow. And that right there is iniquity. And don't you follow it. And I'm not going to follow it. And I'll be your example. I'm your daddy. You should follow. And by the way, could not Levi say, be ye followers of me even as I also am of God? Like Paul said, be ye followers of me as I also am of Christ. In 1 Corinthians 11:1. Folks, Levi lived this way. By the way, could he be impetuous? Could he take the law into his own hands? Go back and read Genesis. Yeah, he and Simeon did that. But this is a part of the Bible not found in the book of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, or Deuteronomy. But this is still the same man, isn't it? Levi. The covenant of life and peace that God made with him, that now the priesthood's going to go through his line. Like the king is going to go through Judah, the brother of Levi, the priesthood's going to go through Levi. Okay? It's going to go through that path, through those descendants. By the way, the blessing, okay, the birthright went through Joseph, according to 1 Chronicles chapter 5. The blessing came through Judah, referring to the promise that God made to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, went through Judah. That in thy seed all families of the earth will be blessed. That went Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah, not Joseph. Joseph got the birthright, according to 1 Chronicles 5, verse 1 and 2. Where did the priesthood come from? It came through this man because he had this kind of attributes, these kind of characteristics. Now, question. Was there a time in the history of this nation, in its early beginnings, that they had a faithful priest? Did they have a man back there in history that they could have studied his life, his spiritual life in particular, and said, now right there is why God made a covenant of peace with him. And this man appreciated that covenant, and he abided up under that covenant, and where have we gone from here? Let's just sort of use a secular illustration. How many of you remember the America, this country, of, let's say, before World War II? Was it Mayberry? What did you do in your neighborhood before World War II with your neighbors? Did you sit out on the porch? Did you have any contact with your neighbors? How about television? Well, how about radio? Okay, had radio, right? How about family values? What was your family values before World War II? Was it like father knows best and I love Lucy or whatever the case may be? What was your family values? Was it like Walton's Mountain? You know, the Waltons? How about Andy Griffin, Mayberry? How long ago has that been? Hadn't been too awful. It hadn't been 100 years, has it? Where are we now? Where are we now in family values? And you and I scratch our head, what happened here? How in the world do you go from a generation that's still alive to what is being propagated out there now? How about the concept of lifestyles? Y'all remember the idea of lifestyles? How about what you find back here about easy divorce back before World War II? What about now? How about lifestyles now? What do you mean by alternative lifestyles? What do you mean by that? Y'all remember, y'all talked about that before World War II, right? In your neighborhoods. It's all over the radio, right? Following this alternative lifestyle. My dad never talked about something like that. As a matter of fact, that was sort of thing people kept hush-hush, wasn't it? Even if it went on. That didn't get out in public. Now what do we do? Now we're parading in the streets, right? Are we parading this in Washington, D.C. streets? Are we parading it in New York, San Francisco? Are we parading it in the streets of America? Folks, it ain't even been 100 years. You tack on 400 years from this right here. You just tack on 400 years, and what do you got? You got the chief priests, the scribes, and the Pharisees that are going to kill the Son of God on a cross. That's what you get in 400 years. No, these people preach the Messiah, the coming one. Yeah? And God also said in the Old Testament, you're going to put him to death. Read the prophecies in Zechariah. Read Isaiah 53. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and we hid as were our faces from him. He is despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. Oh, we won't do that to the Messiah. Yeah, you will. Yeah, you will. And God already foretold 800 years before it happened that you'd do that. And now you're down to 400 years before it happens. What's happening here? Something's changing in here. And it's not just changing in the minds of the nation. It's changing in the minds of the priesthood. And once you start getting the teachers to believe this mess, what do you think they're going to teach? And what do you think the people are going to follow? And if somebody doesn't step forward and say, this is the law of truth, and this right here is iniquity. When the Messiah comes on the scene in the Roman Empire day, he's going to say, thus says the Lord, verily, verily, I say unto you, you have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, but I say unto you, what's he saying? What he's saying is, what they're telling you is not right. That's what he's telling them. You have heard that it hath been said, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. But I say to you, what is the I say to you? He's actually teaching them what the law of Moses did teach. If your enemy be hungry, you feed him. If he be thirsty, you give him something to drink. That you reap fires of coal upon his head. Oh, what's that? The idea is you overcome evil with good. That's what the law of Moses actually taught. By the time you get to the scribes and the Pharisees and the chief priests in Jesus' day, they're going to say, no, you love your neighbor, you hate your enemy. And by the way, who is my neighbor? One's going to ask, right? See, I'm to love my neighbor as myself, right? Who is my neighbor? Willing to justify himself. By the way, who is your neighbor? Everybody that's not you is your neighbor. To them, it's those that love me and the ones that I love, those are my neighbor. I'm not obligated to help anybody else, particularly a Samaritan. And that's the very illustration that Jesus used to show who your neighbor was, the Samaritan, who was neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves. By the time you get to Jesus' day, this corrupt priesthood in Malachi's day is going to be off the scale mixed up. Can you imagine if things continue to progress the way they are right now and you and I, if time goes on, obviously you and I are not going to be here, right? 400 years or two more hundred years. This country's a little over 200 years. Let's just tack on two more hundred more years. You and I are going to be able to stop this trend if we're dead and gone? No. Our influence will be over in this life. Can you imagine if this trend keeps on, what 200 years from now is going to look like? What's 200 years from now in America going to look like? Well, here's 400 years before it happens. And you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you don't have to wonder what 400 years looks like. It's in there. It's in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. How do you correct that? Let's start from the beginning. Let's go find what God said with the very first person that served in a priesthood capacity. The line of the priest. What did that man do? Follow his ways and lay it to heart. And then what we tell people to do? Go back to the Bible. Everything that is of man, set it aside. By the way, everything is either of God or of man. There's no in-between ground there. Everything that's not of the Bible, lay it aside. Follow only what this book right here teaches. This, adding nothing to it, taking nothing from it, not going to the left hand, not going to the right. Folks, that is the heart of the restoration movement of Churches of Christ for over 200 plus years in this world. By the way, that plea is still valid. And it's founded upon the very principle by which even Malachi said, you don't have to write restoration movement in here, but that's what that meant. Restore the priesthood back to like Levi had it. That's what he's saying here. Here's your ancestor. Here's the idea. Here's where the covenant of life and peace started between man and God and the priesthood. Your ancestor. I mean, think about even the founding fathers of this country. Would they roll over in their graves if they knew what was going on in America? What about some of the ones that started congregations of our brotherhood that paid big prices, probably out of their pocket, on top of all their energy and their time and their reputation and influence, and then look at the congregations now where they are? I mean, even I've studied some of the denominational founders. Listen, even those people would not agree with what some of their denominations that they started are now pushing. Oh, we're going to ordain a person of the alternative lifestyle as a senior pastor of that church. Let me tell you something. Even the founding people of that denomination would roll over in their grave. You're going to do what? Oh yeah, we voted on it. We think that's what the tolerable, get this one, the loving Christian thing to do. Your priesthood is perverted. What's the consequences of not heeding? I'll curse your blessings. Matter of fact, I've cursed them already. I'll corrupt your seed and defile you. By the way, I don't even want to go back and read that verse that talks about the kind of defilement he's talking about. He's talking about, ultimately, I'm going to bring a foreign power on you. You remember what the Babylonians did to you? By the way, the foreign power that is going to destroy this nation is the Roman Empire. I'll carry you away. By the way, did that happen? Go to Rome, Italy right now. Go to the old Roman Forum and see if you can't find an arch in there called the Arch of Titus. It's got items that were carried away from the temple compound in Jerusalem, carved on the frieze of that arch. God mean what he says? Does he say what he means? It's going to be a complete and corruptible base before others. In other words, by the time God gets through with you, everybody around you is going to despise you as a people. That's not going to happen. When the Queen of Sheba came to visit Solomon, king of this nation, by the way, under the Mosaic law, right? Under the priesthood of Levi, right? Sons of Aaron. What did Queen of Sheba think about the Israelite nation and the reign of Solomon? Half's not been told me, right? What about the Jewish nation tonight? Do you know prior to 1948, which is, by the way, the United Nations declaration in that year by which Israel basically would get its own territory back, some of you were actually alive before the Israelis actually got that place over there called Israel. By the way, they're still fighting over it between them and the Palestinians now. That'll be a war till the Lord comes back. Where were the Jews before 1948? Come on, listen to your history. Where were the Jews? They were scattered to the four winds of heaven, weren't they? By the way, to a large degree, a lot of them still are. You know, a lot of them are right here in this country. You ever heard of a man named Henry Kissinger? That's his nationality. As far as religion's concerned, too. The Jews became a byword throughout the world. What was Adolf Hitler's take on it? What did he consider the Jews worldwide? Surely there's still no anti-Semitic attitude in the world about these people. Pardon the expression, but we even have a phrase we use in business if someone's going to cheat you out of something. We say, what did Jew you out of? Don't we use that expression? Imagine someone said, what day American you out of? Someone said, American you out of? What do you mean American you out of it? That don't make sense. What did Jew you out of? Oh, I get that. Why would anybody use a phrase like that? It's called a byword. You will be contemptible and base among all nations, among all people. Think about that a minute. Can you imagine in this country, and I'm not just talking about America, but think about the church becoming a byword. You know, people speak evil of truth all the time anyway, but think about justifiably calling the church a byword. Oh, those people. Okay. And then the whole world holds that reputation to us as a people. When you go to Romans 8, verses 5 and 6, you find this phrase, life and peace again. It's not reference to the priesthood of Levi. It's references to Christians, to God's people. For to be carnally minded is death. To be spiritually minded is life and peace. For he that sows to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. He that sows to the Spirit, this is sowing to the Spirit. He that sows to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life. This is life and peace. That principle was true under the patriarchal law. That principle was true under the Mosaical law. And that is true under the Christian system. Life and peace is through a pure priesthood. There's not a single person in here of accountable age can't be in that priesthood. Male or female, young or old of accountable age. You're a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people. You should show forth the praise of him that called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. 1 Peter 2:9. That's talking to Christians. 1 Peter 4:16. But if I'm a part of this life and peace, what have I got to do? Lay it to heart. Lay it to heart. Can you imagine what churches of Christ worldwide would actually be able to show the world if such principles like this were laid to heart? We're a people of the book, for the book, and nothing but the book. And where there's iniquity, we teach you, you don't follow that, not just by word of mouth, but by practice of life. We will turn many people away from iniquity like Levi did under the law of the covenant of life and peace that God made with him. This priesthood should lay this message to heart. Within 400 years, they didn't. And God swept that priesthood away. He established a new priesthood, a priesthood after the order of Melchizedek, that royal priesthood under Jesus Christ, the our high priest. If you're here tonight to offer spiritual sacrifices, you must believe, no doubt, he's the Son of God. You must turn away from sin. You can't grab sin and have life and peace. That's carnal minded. That's death. You must put away the old man. You must bury that old man. Confess the faith you have with your mouth and bury that old man, arise to walk a new life and now be a priest of God. As many of you have been baptized into Christ, have put on Christ, Galatians 3:27. Now you can offer spiritual sacrifices. Or maybe you as a priest have gone back into that way of the world just like they did. They perverted the law. They were partial in the law. Did everything to try to justify their own selves. Maybe you get an opportunity tonight to come back home. We're going to sing this song. Selected. Bill's got the song. He's going to lead it for us. If you're saved, won't you come? While together, stand and sing.